why we love the Song Dynasty, exploring the history and charm of one of China's most fascinating dynasties. Episode 22, Song Zi from the Heart. In this podcast, we're going to be looking at what the Zi writers of the Song Dynasty were singing about in their Zi, and how these Zi give us an amazing insight into the lives and loves of the people. I'm Bob Jones, and in this Why We Love the Song Dynasty podcast, I'm throwing the spotlight on what was to become one of China's most iconic dynasties in the country's long and colourful history. I saw you for the first time at the banquet in Dongqi, wearing a skirt of thin silk embroidered with double butterflies. Your beautiful face is only painted with a touch of powder, just like a wild flower with a faint aroma. You are beautiful in every aspect, and everyone praises your thin waist. Maybe you came from the depths of the mountains last night, since there are floating white clouds on your clothes. A Song Zi piece sung to the tune of Cui Cui Bian and written by Jiang Xian. Let's take a moment to consider the difference between poems and Song Zi in the Tang and Song period. We mentioned before that the Tang dynasty is famous for poems, which we call Tang poems. The literati in the Song dynasty also wrote a lot of poems, but Song poems are not valued as much as Song Zi. So, what's the difference between the Tang and Song poems and Song Zi? In each poem, there are usually either 4 or 8 lines, and each line has either 5 or 7 characters. So Tang and Song poems look very neat, and they follow a fixed pattern of tones. If you read them, you'll find the last words, or even lines, are rhymed. However, Zi look and sound very different. The lyrics of each Zi follow a certain pattern and fit into a tune, and in each Zi there are also longer or shorter sentences. Some Zi pieces are quite long, some are short. These all depend on the tune that the writer wants to use. Such tunes were usually passed on from earlier times. Some Zi writers were good at both lyrics and music and were able to create new tunes themselves. Zhang Kui was one such writer. He wrote 2 Zi pieces, Obscure Scent and Scattered Shadows, by writing lyrics and creating new tunes. Later, Obscure Scent, Scattered Shadow became a well-recognized tune. The title of a Zi piece traditionally is the name of the tune, which often doesn't have much to do with the content of the lyrics, so you may find that different writers wrote Zi with the same names. Sometimes the writer would add a title after the name of the tune to tell the contents of the piece. For example, poet Su Xie wrote a Zi based on the tune of The Charms of Nian Nu, and he added a title, so the full name of this Zi piece became The Charm of Nian Nu, Memories at the Red Cliff. Sadly, the majority of the tunes used in Zi have gradually been lost in history. Today, if people wish to create a Zi, they simply follow the patterns of the lyrics, without reference to the tune. So now, we can only read the Song Zi instead of singing them. As we have so often found when examining the fragments of art that have survived from the Song dynasty, dig deep and they can give you a wealth of information about daily life at the time. The Song Zi we started this podcast with was written about a courtesan. The poet is clearly fascinated by her, describing the way she is dressed, her makeup, and her fragrance. Everything about her is natural, with little artifice. But is there more to it? But we need a little context here. For we know that it wasn't simply about the art form in the Song Dynasty, but also about the way people enjoyed it and those involved in its creation enjoying the process. The people of the Song Dynasty attached great importance to government and the literati, the educated class, the intelligentsia. Not only were their prime ministers literati, but even their military officials were dominated by literati. In the Song Dynasty, the literati not only had high social status, they were also treated very well. They were often encouraged to accumulate personal wealth by emperors who feared their wages were not high enough. So the officials were not only well educated, they also had a bit of money to splash around, which they spent on singing and dancing, which included enjoying Song Tzu poetry. Performed in relaxed surroundings, Tzu lyrics often expressed emotion. The officials were off guard. They could enjoy entertainment, which was a little more personal, and perhaps give free range to their fantasies or affairs of the heart. Although many Song Tzu were written by men, they would often tell stories from a female perspective, singing of gentility, beauty, and the emotions. Sometimes the main character in the Tzu were courtesans, who sometimes played a significant role in the lives of the literati. These vocalized poems were often the only way officials could express their deepest feelings about their true love. There was once a Tzu writer called Yan Ji Dao, who was probably quite typical of the kind of scholar official who would write such poetry to courtesans. His father was a Tzu writer too. In comparison, his work was simpler and more severe than his son's, which is sometimes described as frivolous and preoccupied with song, dalliance, grief, and joy. In his early years, his family was quite rich, but it fell from grace and went into serious decline. And this may well have played a role in shaping him as a Tzu writer. They say, after all, that the best art is born of suffering. Calligrapher, poet, and Tzu writer Huang Tingjian spoke of four silly things in Yan Ji Dao's life. The first silly thing is that his official career was not smooth, but he refused to rely on powerful people. The second is that he refuses to change his prose style to match the demands of the examinations. The third is that his family was rich, but he was ignorant of it. And the last is that he always believes other people who try to deceive him. From this observation, we learn that Yan Ji Dao perhaps took too many things for granted. He didn't play the system and ran his family affairs poorly. He may well have been honest and simple, but he was also naive. So, what, if anything, was he good at? Writing love stories, it seems, or to be more exact, love Tzu. This is from a Tzu called The Partridge Sky. When I met you for the first time, you encouraged me to drink with jade. I was so passionate that I got drunk on your beauty. The dance started from the evening of the moon on the top of the willow until the late night of the treetops outside the building. We danced and sang all we could, and we were so tired that we could shake the fan again. Since that parting, I've always missed our wonderful times together and have enjoyed the dreams that have followed. Tonight, I raise the silver light to look at you, and I'm afraid that this encounter is actually a dream. Is our poet really lamenting on the loss of love? Or maybe it's his status and wealth too. He may well be affectionate towards the courtesan singers of his acquaintance, but he clearly also felt the pain of social failure. In our previous podcast, we touched on the roots of Sun Tzu poetry being in the folk songs people sang in the streets of the cities. Sun cities were large and prosperous, some with populations of more than 100,000 people. Inevitably, city life ended up in the Sun Tzu. Liu Yong, one of the most popular Sun Tzu writers, wrote pieces which were part travelogues, part social commentaries about cities such as Beijing, Luoyang, Yizhou, Yangzhou, Kuaiji, Jinling, and Hangzhou. In Pouring the Cup, he describes the revelry of the people during the Lantern Festival, which marks the final day of Chinese Lunar New Year celebrations. The capital changes light. The moon is very round on this night. The theatrical troupe and music office play the music. The night seems bright, and people are still in the street. The hectic festive streets are also recalled by the great Chinese Tzu writer and military leader Xin Qiji in his work The Lantern Festival, sung to the tune of Green Jade Table. Such a description to historians is priceless. The nighttime spring breeze rouses the lamps on a thousand trees and carries also the fireworks like showers of stars. Strong horses and carved carriages file endlessly along the roads. Flutes sing like phoenixes, jade lanterns dance and gleam. All night, the dragons and the fishes dance, adorned with pendants like moths or willows, draped in filigree. The ladies pass in murmurs and titters, leaving wakes of scent. I, who have sought her 1,000, 100 times, wheel around on a hunch, and there, alone, she is, where the lantern lights are scattered, few and dim. By the way, here's a fact to wow the neighbours with. That line, I who have sought her 1,000, 100 times, in Mandarin,
Zhong Li Xuan Ta Qian Bai Du.
Do the last two characters sound familiar? It was the inspiration for the Chinese Google-like search engine Baidu, expressing the sentiment of seeking retreating beauty amid chaotic glamour, searching for your dreams, persevering despite life's many obstacles. A perfect description of searching the web. The subject matter of the Sun Tzu tells us of a society that was adaptable. They shouldered the responsibility of society and yet pursued personal enjoyment. They tried to integrate urban life with the wildness of the countryside. They went on holiday, if you like, visiting tourist sites as we might today. They had a public face, and yet in the privacy of their own gardens, they'd pour out their hearts. They loved the experience of life, and yet equally loved to observe it. Where Sun Tzu poetry was concerned, no subject matter was off limits. Special thanks go out to Sandy and Zhongdu for their help in creating the content for this show. This is Bob Jones. Thanks for listening. Join me again next time.